This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Bing Y World Class Market, Brennan Smoke Shop, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmower, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
He's going to swing and drive this one to left. That one's headed up there. That ball is gone. A two-home run day for J.D. He's looking like he's back.
Yeah, nicely done. Slider from down under, and he loses it.
So I don't need to tell you, a lot going on in the city of Boston right now. It was a busy day yesterday. Boy, was it a busy day. Red Sox at 4 o'clock, Bruins at 7, Bruins at 8:20, actually. And I don't need to tell you which was the more important of the two and will continue to be the more important of the two until the Stanley Cup playoffs are wrapped up one way or the other. And right now it's looking pretty good. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. And I just want to tell everybody up front, obviously we didn't have a program last night because we had extended Bruins pregame with the Bruins going into game one of the Stanley Cup Finals against the St. Louis Blues. We will be doing the same thing tomorrow. On Felger and Maz, we'll be taking you late up until 7 o'clock, and then I think it's Jones for a half hour into Bruins pregame again. So no Baseball Reporters tomorrow night. And this is a long roundabout way of telling you, if you want to talk about your baseball team, now's the time to do it. Okay, we'll take you up until 7 o'clock, 617-779-0985, though you already know that. Here's what we're going to do tonight. Really, three primary topics, okay? And in this order. One is the state of the Red Sox as they are right now, and they were 12-5 winners over the Indians yesterday at Fenway Park. But given the inconsistency of the programming, and when I say that, I mean of this show, because the Bruins take priority at the moment, and that is that's not a gripe. That's a statement of fact, and it's obviously the right thing to do. We only have had limited opportunities to check in on the Red Sox here, so it hasn't been a daily thing. So I want to go back to the series against the Astros over the weekend and what it told you or what it did not tell you about the Red Sox and where they are going in 2019. That's number one. Number two is the story with Dustin Pedroia, who has been placed on the 60-day disabled list with a degenerative knee condition that is not going to get any better. Pedroia himself was asked when he is going to play again, or if he was asked, rather, do you think you're going to play again? And he said, I don't know. I don't know. So I want to get your thoughts on Pedroia, how you feel about the story overall, both in the short term and the long. Okay. And later on in the program, surprising news yesterday, because I don't think any of us, I certainly wasn't, were aware of the gravity of the situation concerning the health of Bill Buckner, who passed away at the age of 69 with, and I'm going to get it wrong, Murray, what's the name of it? Lewy body dementia. Okay, which is something I honestly had never even heard about or know much about, and had to look it up yesterday. And so there's a couple of sad stories there. One is Pedroia, one is Buckner, and we'll get to those later in the show as well. But as it pertains to the Red Sox in the short term, looking at where they are, okay, and I told you they began a stretch of games really on Friday, May 17th, with a series against the Houston Astros at Fenway Park where they were going to play some good teams. They had two series with the Astros, and then Cleveland was in town, and the Indians are here now. You'll have two more with them tonight and tomorrow. Then four at New York, you go to Kansas City, and then you get the Rays, Rangers, Orioles, and Twins. Okay, but the point is you are going to see the Astros twice, the Indians, the Yankees, the Rays, and the Twins. All of those teams really are in contention for a playoff spot, as are the Rangers, believe it or not. That'll take you through Wednesday, June 19th. At which point we should have a pretty good idea of who and what the Red Sox are this year. So, to this point, let me begin by telling you. On the morning of May 17th, which is the morning of the first game against the Astros in this one-month stretch, the Red Sox were four games out. The number is now 6.5. It was 7.5 going into the finale in Houston. The Red Sox won the last game, and then they won against the Indians yesterday on Memorial Day. So you are now at 6.5. But during this period of time, the lead, the deficit for the Red Sox has gone up by 2 games. And if that continues, boy, you're going to be in big trouble come the middle end of June. Okay, so it's still early in the process. You get the Indians in here now and then the Yankees. But I haven't liked what I've seen so far. And as it goes for the weekend in Houston, there really should be 2 particular things that stand out. And because of the relative shortage of time that we have, I can't go over every highlight and every play from those games over the weekend. But the first one that should stick out to you is the game on Friday night. The Red Sox dug themselves in a hole in that game. And to say they played sloppily is a huge understatement.
Mariznick has hit 6 home runs. He's going to ground this one to Bogarts. Coming home, here's the throw. It gets away on in the backstop. The run is in to score. Chirinos, here's the throw down to second. They've got Mariznick in a rundown with a runner at third as well, and they're not going to get an out there.
No, this is very ugly.
Boy, I'm with Jerry Remy. Very ugly. How about that play? Bogarts makes a bad decision to throw home. Then they get a guy in a rundown between first and second. Pierce and Chavis. Not exactly 2 gold glovers over there, and they couldn't get the guy on a rundown. Big league players unable to execute a rundown. That was Friday. Saturday, the Red Sox played themselves back into the game, scraped their way back in, and then they went to the bullpen in the last inning.
2-2 pitch from Barnes. Correa dumps it in the right, and the Astros win it. 4-3.
So really, 2 identical scores, 4-3 both nights. Red Sox lose them both. At that point, you were 1-4 against Houston. Eduardo Rodriguez came out on Sunday, pitched a good game, and the Red Sox avoided a sweep. The first person who tries to compare this past weekend in Houston to the one last year where the Red Sox lost the first 2 and then won the last 2, I might hang up on you. I might hang up on you.
No, you should. And the game Friday night was pathetic because the Astros still won that game by only getting 4 hits in that game. But you know, we talk about some of those horrific errors that they had. And that's just indicative of like John Farrell era Red Sox type baseball. Like, I don't know. I thought we were past this with Alex Cora, you know, leading this team right now. But apparently not. I thought, look, it was fine that they were able to salvage a game on Sunday. But those first 2 games, specifically Friday night, I thought were embarrassing.
It was. That game Friday night was embarrassing. And when I say I may hang up on you because I think it's apples and oranges. You know, last year, Cora said the Red Sox showed some grit. This thing was nothing more than avoiding the sweep. And again, they've hovered around 500 now for a long time. So in any case, 617-779-0985. Dan's in a car on the Astros series. Go ahead, Dan.
Tony, these guys can't hit with bases loaded. It hurt them when they were at Fenway, and then it hurt them again in Houston. And I want to say that at least out of the 4 games they lost, there were 2 or 3 of those games where they had a great opportunity with bases loaded that would at least give them 1 or 2 more runs to win. And they blew it. I think in one of them, they blew it with either no outs or 1 outs. That's a big contrast from last year to this year. Well, last year they hit in bases loaded. This year, they can't hit at all with bases loaded.
Yeah, so, Dan, I'll tell you what. I haven't looked up the bases loaded numbers specifically, but I'll tell you that generally it's with men on. They've left lots of guys on base this year. In fact, I'll venture to look up where they rank in that particular category and, you know, and where they are with the bases loaded. Because last year, we all know, how many grand slams did they hit in the first, like, 3 weeks? Was it, like, 6 in the first month of the year? Remember that? They hit all those grand slams. I mean, you couldn't get him out with the bases loaded in those big spots. Steve's in the car. Steve, what do you got? All right.
Hey, Tom.
Oh, go ahead. Go.
Like the bullpen thing is got to be figured out. And, you know, you look at each of them individually, they're all decent, but they should figure it's going to be Barnes as a setup, a Workman, and then they get to Walden. They can't keep juggling around. I think that if they had more consistency, that would be helpful.
So, Steve, again, you know, this is sort of the great question, the great dilemma, right? Like you look at it and you say, well, is it the system? Is it this whole floating, you know, closer by committee thing? Or is it the fact that they don't have enough good arms out there? And I think it's kind of both, because if you had a clear closer, you would have to respect him. You know, somebody's not going to come here and be the closer unless they know they're going to get the saves. Closers are selfish. That's what they are. But it would sort of impose the structure on the bullpen and force Cora to go to that. And I ultimately don't think they have enough arms. Okay, I don't think they have enough arms. But I don't love the structure either. I just think you got human beings here, and you can't, you know, they need to know. They like to mentally prepare, and we all like to know what the job's going to be. Buddy Tom's in Quincy. Tom, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, Tony? Hey, we've been talking for months about what the setup should be in the bullpen. And, you know, Dombrowski decided to go against that and just go with committee thing, which has never helped any team ever. But away from that for a second, they rolled over Cleveland last night. And we all thought going into this year that Cleveland would probably win the division over there. Minnesota is playing out of their mind, which I can't see them staying on that pace. But, you know, is suck bag as the Sox were to start the year, they get the fifth best winning percentage in the league. And that makes me more mad, because if they didn't come out of, you know, spring training with their heads up their ass necessarily, they could be ahead of the Yankees right now.
So, Tom, look, I'm sorry, I just let you go. But you raise an interesting point. What I thought you were going to say is that these games with the Indians are important, because Cleveland might be in contention for a wild card spot as well. In fact, it looks like they're going to be, because of what the Twins are doing out there. And see, I wonder, I just think the American League Central has been so fluid the last couple of years. If you remember, the year before last, the Twins were pretty good. Then last year, they sucked. Now they're good again. And I think the reality is that the Twins are a pretty good team. They just had a horrible year last year. But now with the Indians being where they are, that's a team that you might have to beat out in the wild card race if that's where you end up. The Red Sox are 6.5 out of the division, 7 in the loss column. Okay, we're closing in on June here. So I'm not telling you the division's out of reach. The Yankees are going to be hard to catch. Not to mention Tampa. You got to catch two teams, not one. So this series with the Indians, it does matter to the Red Sox. They will be without Dustin Pedroia, however, both in this series and well beyond. He was placed on the 60-day injured list yesterday. We'll explain the ramifications of that move and really take a look at the career of Dustin Pedroia, because sadly, I think it might be time to do that.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Baseball Reporters,
which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Kills it. Uh-oh.
Gomez with a swing. Here comes Marrero to charge, fire, and he throws it away. That'll skip back up on the road, back to first base to tag, and he got him! He got him! A pinball play to cut down Gomez.
So I know what you're thinking. What the hell is that? What highlight is that? And this leads me into the conversation about Dustin Pedroia, who was placed on the 60-day IL yesterday, the 60-day injured list, formerly the disabled list. But you know, someone was asking me about this yesterday, so I feel compelled to get into what that means concerning Dustin Pedroia and the 60-day IL. Okay, the injured list say, well, you can backdate it, so whatever days he's missed. In other words, if he's already missed 30 days, Pedroia only will be on the injured list for another 30. He could play in 30 days. True. That's really not what the 60-day injured list is about. But before I get to that, that highlight that you heard right there, and I'll ask Jimmy Stewart and this and Jim Murray, and I know I'm kind of springing it on you. I asked this during the afternoon program earlier in the day. So, I you know, it's a serious question. If I were to ask you for the definitive highlight of Dustin Pedroia's career, like, for example, we say David Ortiz, he had a million of them, right? The grand slam against the Tigers, the two homers against the Yankees, the two hits against the Yankees to win those games. Like, all these game winners, you could pick from a dozen of them. Do you remember, is there one that stands out for you with Pedroia? And if there isn't, that's okay.
No. I mean, the easy answer is, well, when he won the MVP in 08, but that's a larger, you know, that's a bigger accomplishment. But in an individual play, no, nothing stands out.
Jimmy?
I have 3.
Okay, go.
His 3-homer game against the Rockies, okay, which you could eliminate because it's in Colorado as okay, the number 3 hitter. His leadoff home run in the 07 World Series.
Okay, that's a good one.
And it's not me, it's them with the Manny Machado situation.
Okay, so again, and that one was a negative one, right? But I hear you. That's one that, you know, sticks out to from more recently in Pedroia's career.
Oh, and Bobby Valentine. That's not how we do it here.
Okay, so that's another one. Again, sort of speaks to off-field and his... you know, the team breaking down, and he was in the middle of a couple of those, but the player, like I look at now and I heard Pedroia yesterday. Oh man, it's hard not to feel bad for the guy. And that, Murray, I heard you say this over the weekend, that it's a bad sign when you start to feel pity for a player. Bad sign.
Oh yeah.
And in the case of Dustin Pedroia, I think we all know what this is, and this is the end. That's what this is. Okay. It's the end. And this is a guy you should have a lot of respect for as a competitor, because he was a good competitor. I mean, Pedroia was a part of, really critically, two championship teams.
Oh, no doubt.
And he gets a ring from last year, too. But Dustin Pedroia was a winning player.
And his reputation's taken a hit, and too much so, or in recent years, because of some of the antics, like Jimmy just mentioned, like top of the dugout, that's not them, that's me with the Orioles and all that stuff, and how he handled some of the media questions and how defensive he was. But overall, yeah, no, we should appreciate, and I think people do, what Dustin Pedroia did here. And this is sad, you know, because I understand not wanting to hang it up and still feel like you have something left, but, you know, when you're replacing floors in your home because you're having trouble walking and you know deep down your knee's never going to be the same, like... I don't know, man. Like, it's probably time to walk away.
And I'll tell you
just
what,
so you can walk when you're 60.
He's the kind of guy I worry about without baseball. Believe me when I tell you, of all the guys I covered, and I covered Pedroia, I mean, he's like one of the last guys on that team that I really have any sort of knowledge of. And I like him quite a bit. He's a good guy. I mean, you know, I don't agree with everything he's done over the years, and he'll be the first to tell you he doesn't agree with everything I did either. We had our moments, but overall, I think we got along. I think he liked me and I liked him. Not that that really matters. But at the end of the day, I respected how we played, and he loves baseball. Like, he loves playing baseball. So he's one of those guys I look at and say, what's he going to do? He's got to be around the game. He's not the kind of guy that can be away from the game. Okay, but the play we played for you at the top of the segment there. Jimmy, let's play it again. Because now that I think of it, Pedroia isn't even mentioned in the clip. This is one of the plays that stuck out to me, and Jimmy's right. The more memorable one is probably leading off the World Series with a home run in 07. He was a leadoff hitter on that team. A lot of people forget that. It wasn't Jacoby Ellsbury. It was Pedroia. Jacoby Ellsbury got into the playoffs late that year. He was a call-up, and he batted at the bottom of the lineup.
Because Coco was struggling because Francona wanted to stay with the veteran.
Pedroia made this play in Texas a couple of years ago. It was a 5-5 game in the ninth inning. The ball was dribbled to third base. Carlos Gomez beat the play out. Devin Marrero threw it away. Gomez was going to go to second, but Pedroia backed up the play, sliding on his side, prevented the ball from going down the right field line, and then before he even got up, saw that Gomez had started to turn and threw it back to first base, and they got him out. I mean, it was a great heads-up, like, only Pedroia kind of play. Jimmy, play it again.
Kills it. Uh-oh. Gomez with a swing. Here comes Marrero to charge, fire, and he throws it away. That'll skip back up by Pedroia, back to first base to tag, and he got him! He got him! A pinball play to cut down Gomez.
Okay, so he actually says they're backed up by Pedroia. He said it so fast you almost can't hear the name. But to me, that's what Pedroia was. Pedroia was a winning player. Even if it didn't end up that way at the end with some of the crap that went on, he don't sell Pedroia short. And it's sad. He deserved to go out on his own terms. Most of them do. Most of the good ones do. He's not going to get that. Matt's in the car. Matt, go.
Hey, how are you, Tony?
Good. Quickly on Pedroia. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, after his statements the other day, what are your thoughts on him heading back to the lineup? And if he does make it back to the lineup, you know, do you think that he'd make an impactful return? Or do you think that, you know, he'd be better off in the clubhouse somewhere?
Matt, I think he's done. I think he's done. I think that's it. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to take these calls quickly because I'm going to get all the Pedroia stuff out now. John's in a car. John, go. Yeah, John, I'll tell you what, I got to put you on hold. It's not working. Let's go to Joe in a car. Joe, go.
I'm sick of this Dustin Pedroia stuff. The guy sucked in the World Series. Look up his numbers. He wasn't good in the World Series that he played in. He has great numbers for his career. I think he's hit like .299 for his career average. But after the Uke Bobby V thing in 2012, I was sick of it with that guy. I was done with him. He acts all big and tough like he's this hardcore player, but he's a dink when he screws up, and then he's not accountable, and he doesn't talk to the media. Like, he's just a bad guy, and I say, like, you may have covered him and you might like him, but I don't know him personally. So from what I see of him, he literally accused Bobby V of doing the thing that he was doing. Like, he's such a hypocrite. I'm just so sick of him. Good riddance. Get him out of here. As far as I'm concerned, it's been a long time coming.
Okay, so, Joe, let me tell you, Bobby V was an a-hole. Bobby V was an a-hole. And anybody who was around baseball knew it. So, look, I'm not telling you I agreed with everything Pedroia did at the end of his career. The Bobby V thing, I think he was right. I think Bobby V was tweaking Euculus. Pedroia was wrong to go about it publicly. Okay, but they didn't want Bobby V on that team. And again, I blame that one on Red Sox ownership for bringing in a manager that nobody wanted anything to do with. The team at that time was toxic. It was a mess. But let's not rewrite history. Okay? Pedroia was a good player and he was a winning player. So let's not be ridiculous about it either. And believe me when I tell you, he's not a bad guy. You said he's a bad guy. He's nowhere close to a bad guy. He's just not a leader. You wanted him to be a leader. They needed him to be a leader. And in his own way, he played hard every day, but he didn't want to deal with all the political bullcrap that exists around the team. He didn't want to do it. Again, this is what I tell you. He loved the baseball part of the job. Still does, I'm sure. Wanted to show up every day, play, and not be bothered with all the bullcrap. That's what he wanted. And unfortunately, you know, in this market, that's hard to do. But he could hack it. You put him in a big spot, big situation. Pedroia wasn't afraid. Okay, so I want to play for you what he said yesterday, too. We'll do that in a minute. I told you about the 60-day injured list. I will touch on that, and Bill Buckner will do all of that after Murray gets you caught up in headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first.
So as it relates to Dustin Pedroia, and again, people have asked what happens now, and I'm not trying to be cavalier or dramatic or anything. I think it's over. I think it's over, and I think Dustin Pedroia knows it's over. So the Red Sox placed him on the 60-day IL. More on that in a second. But just listen to Pedroia yesterday as he speaks. Okay, and listen to the tone of his voice, and also listen to the kinds of things he's talking about, right? He sounds like a guy who is doing everything other than announcing his retirement, if you ask me. That's what Pedroia sounds like. And just so you know, you keep this in context. The question to Pedroia yesterday that prompted this response was, do you think you're going to play again?
I'm not sure. You know, I think that's a part of, you know, the time right now is figuring that out. You know, I've been lucky to be with this organization and to deal with the people in our training room and our doctors and have the best, you know, manager, coaching staff, front office, and they've been, you know, leading me in the right direction the whole way. I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, the type of injury that I had, and I have, you know, so, you know, I'm just trying to listen to everybody and try to do the right thing, and, you know, and then they care about me, and you can't say that about everybody, you know, every team or things like that, but everybody here truly cares about me, and you know, I love them for it.
Okay, so again, first of all, when you start talking about the organization, how good they've been to you, he knows the writing's on the wall. It's been on the wall for a long time. Secondly, he caught himself, the kind of injury I have. Pedroia knows. It hasn't gone away. It's degenerative. He has a degenerative knee. Here's what I would tell Dustin Pedroia. Find a way to stay around baseball, and don't do anything that's going to prevent you from, you know, playing catch with your kids in the backyard. Okay, because he had a good run, but I think with Pedroia, it's over, and I think we all know it, including Pedroia. On the 60-day IL, just quickly, because I know people say, well, he's already missed 30 days. He'll miss 30 more, and he can play. It's not about going on the injured list. It's about coming off the 40-man roster. In Major League Baseball, when you move a guy to the 60-day injured list, he comes off of the big league roster. Okay, more often than not, it means they're not expecting you back. That's what it means, and they want to give the roster spot to someone else. You put a guy in the 10-day DL, he stays on that 40-man. The only guys who can play in big league games are guys who are on the 40-man roster. Okay, you have to be on the 40-man roster to play in the major leagues. Now they can use that spot on someone else so Pedroia comes off it. That is the real meaningful aspect of the 40-man roster. John is in a car. John, go.
Pedroia's situation is sad, not only for what's going on with him as a contributor to the Red Sox, being a 12-, 13-year-old player, but it's also sad for the team because they're currently hamstrung by his contract being so close up against the salary cap. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, so, John, yeah, look, that's been true for a while. Pedroia didn't play last year. They won the World Series with him, without him. But with him on the payroll. So there's about $14.5 million, I think it is, that affects them a little bit. But you tell me, who are you more upset about being on the payroll, Dustin Pedroia or Pablo Sandoval? I'll take Pedroia's $14.5 million. Sandoval's still on too. I'm not telling you either one of them is right at the end of the day. And the Red Sox got lucky that Michael Chavis came up and did what he did because they've gotten production out of second base because Nunez can't play the position, and I'm not sure Brock Holt's an everyday guy. So Chavis has bailed him out big time. Ryan's in Andover. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the biggest thing that Pedroia used to bring to the team was just the fact that you could always count on him for the heads-up play. He made a play that I'll always remember him for back in 2014 against the Angels where he stole second off of the Angels, and then because of the shift to Ortiz, he just popped up and immediately stole third and ended up leading to them winning in 14 innings. And you can always count on him for those type of plays.
So, look, he was a heady player. Okay, Pedroia was a heady player. I want to take two more calls, and then I want to get to Bill Buckner as well. So let's start with I'm just going to ask you both to make your points quickly. Tom and Worcester on Pedroia. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, I'm back in the other guy, Tony. You know, nice couple of years early in his career. When things went sideways, he really turned into a whiner. In the end, he was no different than Brock Holt. Thanks.
Okay, let's not get stupid. Brock Holt shouldn't
right,
even
now
be,
this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, he shouldn't even be mentioned in the same conversation as Dustin Pedroia, for crying out loud. You know, at one point, and I was never one of them, but I'm just saying, there were people who thought Pedroia could be a Hall of Fame caliber talent. He's not. But he was a starter on two championship teams. He was the leadoff hitter on one of them and won the MVP in 08. We're going to compare him to Brock Holt now? I mean, seriously, if that's what you feel about the guy, you're blind with hatred because you didn't like what he was or what he represented at the end. Ray in a car, go.
Hey, Tony, just a quick point on Pedroia. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when he said that to Machado, didn't he say something to the effect that it wasn't me, it was them, I would hit you in the ass right away? I think he gets a bad rap for that comment.
Okay, so Ray, what he said was, that wasn't me, that was them. Okay, when the Red Sox threw at Machado. And honestly, I thought Pedroia made a huge mistake in that. If he has a relationship with Manny Machado and they want to be buddies, fine. Then he can call him after the game and tell him what happened. But to do it on the top step of the dugout was a really bad look. And it made the Red Sox look divided. Now, they probably were. But again, the rest of us don't need to know that. So I thought Pedroia made a mistake there, and I'd be willing to bet that if you asked him about it now, he would acknowledge that. Okay, I always found him to be that sort of guy that if he did something stupid in the short term, later on when he calmed down, he'd say, yeah, I kind of screwed that up. Now, I just, again, a lot has happened here in the last couple of days. We're probably not going to have another show until Thursday, so I do want to get to Bill Buckner as well. And those of you who are my age lived through it in 86, so you understand the whole story with Buckner. Those of you who didn't live through it still understand most of the story with Buckner because of the magnitude of the collapse by the Red Sox in the 1986 World Series. Buckner became the poster child for that. He wasn't the only guy to screw up in that inning, and when he made the error, the game had already been tied. So there was a lot that sort of preceded that mistake. Nonetheless, the image is what it is. With the World Series on the line, whether it happened in Game 2 or Game 6, there was a little dribbler to first base that went through Bill Buckner's legs like he was a 7-year-old playing Little League for the first time. And it's something he never really lived down, at least not until the Red Sox won a championship. For those of you who don't know, Buckner passed away yesterday at the age of 69. Later in his life, he had to move to Idaho because the scrutiny and criticism over that misplay in the World Series became so bad that he really needed to isolate himself from people. So believe me when I tell you that I didn't cover Buckner. I didn't really know him. Everything I heard was good. And you want to talk about a tragic figure in Red Sox history who became emblematic of all Red Sox failures from 1918 to 2004, Bill Buckner was the guy. Whether or not he deserved it, we can debate. Okay, nobody deserves that. And again, from what I'm told, Buckner was a good guy and he was a good player. So no human being deserves that. Whether you want to say that, well, you make a mistake in a big spot in the imagery, that's the reality of the world. We all know that. Okay, so again, I'm not telling you that Buckner was treated, recklessly or unfairly or all that, because had he hit a home run to win the World Series, he'd have been a hero for it too. And that's just the nature of professional sports and the nature of what we do in this day and age. Chris is in Florida. Chris, what do you got? Chris, you there? Okay, no, Chris. We'll continue with calls on other things involving the Red Sox. Steve and Bill Ricker. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, what's up, Tony? I feel bad for Buckner. I mean, that's what he lived through. I mean, that's all. Imagine if we never won a World Series after that. Thank God we won after that. But with Pedroia, definitely that Texas play, that was an overthrown ball by Marrero. But third of all, they need consistency, either it be the lineup or the bullpen. And I know you've heard this before, but I don't know why Eovaldi's been put in the bullpen.
Well, Steve, look, Eovaldi's still in the DL. Okay, maybe he ends up in the bullpen. In the short term, regarding the 2019 Red Sox, here's what I'll tell you. The offense, the bullpen, the starting pitching, none of it's been consistent. The defense hasn't been consistent. I mean, again, you can say for pockets of time they've gotten things over 3 weeks, but they've been consistent at nothing. And you know what that is indicative of? A mediocre team. So now it's still early. I think they're what, 27 and 29 and 25? I don't even know what the hell their record is at the moment. Something like that. Okay, 29 and 25 they are. 54 games in, exactly one-third of the season, and the Red Sox are on pace for 87 wins. So you can say, well, 87 might get them in the playoffs. It might be enough. Might get them in as a wild card team. That might be enough. They are still grossly underachieving. Just quickly, time for the Rodenheiser Heat Zone. Who's Hot? Brought to you by our friends at Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric. Right now, Mookie Betts, 6-game hitting streak, .333 average, 2 doubles, a home run, 3 RBIs in those games heading into tonight's game with the Indians. He is your a Red Sox player in the Rodenheiser Heat Zone. We'll wrap it up with your calls and check in with Adam Jones, give you the matchup of the game of tonight's affair with Cleveland. All of that when we come back.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazzarotta show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, before we get back to your calls, quickly, Big Y matchup of the game presented by Big Y World Class Market, serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. Starting pitcher for the Indians tonight, Zach Plesac, the nephew of Dan Plesac, not the son, the nephew of Dan Plesac, former left-hander who pitched for a number of teams in the big leagues. I think this is his major league debut, so he has no history against anybody on the Red Sox roster. Meanwhile, David Price back on the mound for the Red Sox after leaving the game in Houston over the weekend because of illness. Carlos Santana of the Indians owns him. 11 for 34, .324 average, also with 7 walks. So Santana's on base against Price is .441. I mean, that's a big number. And there's something else I was going to say about David Price. I don't remember. Oh, Plesac is what I was going to say. Dan Plesac, the uncle, I saw him give up one of the freaking longest bombs I've ever seen anybody hit in my life in Toronto against Carl Everett. Carl Everett, crazy Carl, who actually, Plesac was a lefty. Everett batted lefty against him, even though he was a switch hitter, because he just thought he was better from that side. Plesac hung him a slider that Everett hit into the restaurant in center field.
Literally?
It went into the restaurant. I mean, like, again, the way that, you know, I call it the Sky Dome still, but the way that thing was set up way above it in center field, way up high, there was a restaurant there where they would open the windows because they thought, who the hell's going to hit a ball up here? Everett hit it up there, right in someone's frog legs in Toronto. That's what it was. Absolute freaking heat-seeking missile. What a smash. It was the only time I ever, like, looked at Carl Everett in awe. The rest of the time, I looked at him in fear and trembled. He terrified me. Chris is in the car. Chris, what do you got? You got to go fast.
Yeah, real quick. I'll go Buckner. I loved him. Absolutely. Him and Dwight Evans. I changed my thing. I want to talk about Benintendi, but I'll give you Buckner. I loved him. I was 1986. I was 16 years old.
All right, so, Chris, I want to avoid story time. Okay, so we all remember Buckner. It's a sad story. Buckner was a good player. And from what I understand, a good guy. And, you know, people are talking about the eyebrows and the mustache and the hair. Like, Sam Elliott would play Buckner in the movie, okay? Like, he's sort of the perfect guy for him. And from what I and Buckner was a good ball player, almost 3,000 hits. You know, he only struck out less than 500 times in his career. He won a batting title, and he's remembered for that play. And you know, there were a lot of guys in baseball, you'd say, well, that guy was a loser. I don't think Bill Buckner was a loser. I think he was a good teammate, and I wouldn't – what happened to him – I wouldn't wish on anybody. Chris is in Florida. Chris, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, man?
You got to be fast, Chris. Go.
All right. First time caller, long time listener. First of all, my grandmother has dementia. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Second of all, Pedroia, I've always looked up to him. I've always wanted to be just like him. I wouldn't say anything about Terry Francona and all the chicken and beer shit.
All right. Yeah, we're going to, Jimmy, obviously you'll catch that. All right. It's time to move on. That's what we're going to do. I always fear these topics because people take them into places they really shouldn't take them into. And look, Jones doesn't like Pedroia. He's never liked the little leader. But all I'm saying to people with regard to Pedroia is if you didn't like him at the end, I understand that. The guy was a good player. You know, there's a measure of humanity in me always at the end that when a guy is forced out of the game and it's not his choice and it's for health reasons, it's one thing when it's a player's performance is deteriorated and he can't accept it, because that's all of them. But Pedroia, I think, still had something left were it not for the knee. And the knee really is borderline crippled him on the field. Well, what do you got, Pac-Man?
Well, let me ask you this analogy with Pedroia, because it's not that I always disliked Pedroia. I didn't like him at the end. And how this is ending is unfortunate. I mean, he's stolen away people's jobs the last couple of years while he's tried to come back with Swihart and Hanley Ramirez were released as collateral damage. But, you know, I don't like how it's ended for him. The analogy I've made with him before is Nomar, and it's not really how like Pedroia treated
members. It's not bad,
but like Pedroia at the beginning of his career was obviously legit. I think by the end, you know, fans had soured on him, but I think, you know, 5-10 years down the line, I think everybody, it'll all be water under the bridge. I just think now in the immediate time with him around this team, I'm kind of over what he brings, but I can respect what he did for his career. Same thing with Nomar.
So, Garcia Parra in his first 2 years won the Rookie of the Year and finished second in the MVP. Pedroia won the Rookie of the Year and won the MVP.
Yeah, right? So there's that too. That's an even better analogy than I realized.
I mean, no, they're very similar in a lot of ways. And Nomar had a lot of physical problems too. So, Pedroia to me was a better teammate than Garcia Parra.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I just know fans turned on Nomar similar to how some fans have turned on Pedroia. I'm not talking about with teammates in his clubhouse or how he treated media members with his red line and stuff. I'm not talking about any of that.
And I would just say quickly, too, that as at their best, at their peak, Nomar was a way better player. Way, way better player. Mm. I mean, Garcia Parra was like a, you know, perennial MVP. And Pedroia kind of won it by a fluke. And truly, Youkilis should have won the MVP that year, but that's another story for another day. So you and I can't coming up full
yes,
fivesies?
Yes. Full fivesies. We're off at midnight tonight. No bonus hour like last night until 1 o'clock. We have 5 hours to get to the Bruins, their win last night, and what it means for the rest of the series going forward.
Okay, Murray's get your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.